Welcome to Out of the Blue, part of Mazin Brew, part of the SB Nation Podcast Network, the podcast that has the same predictable formula of a drunk jazz trumpet solo. I am Jared Stormer of MazinBrew.com. With me, as always, is Andy Bailey, my hetero life mate, also of MazinBrew.com. Andy, you impenetrable pillbox of both emotion and cinematic knowledge. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, sir. A little sick, a little under the weather today, but, you know, it's okay. It's a bye week. It's time to get the body right, prepare for next week's adventure and how we're going to, you know, move on to the second half of the season.
Your body is smart, as is mine. I also got sick, but the body knows that it's the bye week. You can afford it. We're all, like, taking this as self-improvement week, both us and the Michigan players. You and I just having minor colds and them having hard contact injuries and contusions, you know, from 300-pound men smashing into their knees. But regardless.
Yeah, very comparable. You know, I did stumble down some steps. I didn't fall over completely, but it kind of jolted me. So, you know, some whiplash there. But we're on the mend. We're going to be ready for the Wildcats in 2 weeks.
That's called a high-intensity contact injury. That's an adventure injury, my friend. I had to get all my vaccinations for Thailand, so they just stuck me with everything. It was like being in boot camp again. So immune system's been through a bit of a whiplash, but it's bye week, baby. It's fine. Now's the time to grind some tape, you know, watch some other college football, see what else is happening in the world of sports. We got basketball starting here soon. Baseball playoffs are on. This is, without a doubt, the best sports period of the year is mid to late October.
Great time. Hockey just dropped buck last night on their season back on ESPN, and it's good. I love all of this. Football Monday night game was a banger. Michigan's winning. I mean, what more could we ask for right now?
The answer is nothing. Speaking of Michigan winning, let's talk about it, my friend. After the biggest heart attack game of the year, I would say, with ease. Yeah, over a 32-29 victory against Nebraska in Lincoln against a raucous crowd, much louder than in Madison. This seemed like it was the first and greatest road test for them as far as environment. And they found a way to get it done. But this game was, like we said, a heart attack. And there's a lot to take away from this thing. Where do you want to start?
Firstly, this is a chain smoking type of game. You don't enjoy this game. You just kind of sit there and take it. You just rip through a box of them and you yell at people to be quiet. First takeaway is the third word you said there, victory. Michigan came out on top. That is all that matters in this situation, and we'll go from there. What led to that victory? And let's start in a place we don't normally. Let's start on special teams with the salt hitting, field goal kicking Jake Moody.
Man. This is a guy that I'm definitely going to invite to my wedding if I ever get married. I don't think he'll respond, but he's earned it. The guy, 14 of our 32 points. He's 4 for 4 on field goals, including two that are absolute just white knucklers there late in this game. Hasn't missed an extra point yet. Is 11 for 12 on field goals, putting him at second in the nation as far as efficiency on such a volume. This dude is an absolute weapon, and without him, we probably have two losses. We shouldn't have needed him as much as we needed him in this game, and we'll get to that when we get to the offense, but he did his job here. Absolute helmet sticker dude, and I mean, the most reliable kicker in a decade at Michigan at this point, looking like it.
We need a nickname for him, so it could be like All-State or State Farm or something, because you don't want to need him, but you're glad you have him when you do.
Ooh, Jake from State Farm. Yeah,
that's that. It works out so perfect.
It's not bad. They call him Money, you know, Money Moody or Jay Money. That's a little simplistic. We can do better, but yeah, I'm not bad with State Farm.
Jake from State
Farm. Insurance, baby. He's insurance.
There it is. And he won the game. Those two huge kicks. He needed a little redemption because his one miss of the year came when he could have iced the game against Rutgers. So that was one that was kind of lingering over him. So got his redemption here on the road, that environment, the pressure. I mean, it was a fantastic performance for him. I couldn't be more thrilled, man.
Yeah, he deserved it. Special teams have been a huge, huge win for us this year. And special shout out to Jay Harbaugh, who we were talking offline right before this pod. This is the first time he's had a whole position group where it's actually a part of the team. He's a coordinator now. This dude has been rising, 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 and is a legitimate coach, not just nepotism there at Michigan. I would expect him to be a head coach one day. So props to Jay Harbaugh as well and the special teams unit, even though rough AJ Henning day.
Rough AJ Henning day, very good learning experience for him. Brad Robbins, our chair wielding player on the sideline. We love his energy.
Lunatic.
He's still hitting nukes down the field and flipping fields. And he shanked one. One went off the side of his foot in this game, but wasn't the end of the world. He bounced back from that. So, no, man, having the special teams where they are is such a luxury to have, because Quinn Nordine would have put that field goal somewhere in Kansas.
100%, man. All right, next, let's move to the offense in this one. The offense, which probably bailed out the defense for the first time all year, even though the defense came up clutch in the end of this one. It's 13-0 at the half. I think it should have been 17-0 at the half. This feels more like a game, and I was going to bring this point up later, but I don't want to forget it. People were saying this is a game that maybe we should have lost. This feels more like a game we should have put away early. Rutgers feels more like a game we should have lost. Do you agree?
Rutgers last year feels like a game we should have lost.
And this year, like, we did not do anything in the second half against Rutgers. In this second half, we responded to everything they did.
I don't know if I've had that Rutgers performance this year on that level, but I get your point anyway. I agree with you, what you're saying about Nebraska. This game feels like one we just couldn't let slip away. Like, if we had lost it, we would have really just collapsed. And that's what it felt like was happening. But Michigan outgained them still, and we outscored them at the end, which is the most important thing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I also caught myself. So a reader pointed out that I say absolutely all the time, but so does Cade McNamara. Every time he's interviewed, he says absolutely to everything. So I'm going to keep riding with it, but I am going to try to be better about that. First half offense, it was more ball control. The defense stood tall, really, in the first half of this one. We were able to run the ball a little bit. Very bizarre first half between the stoppages of play, the reviews. I think there was 3 reviews. There was like 4 overturned calls. The refs are getting everything wrong from, the spot on the Haskins run, which was 6 feet short, to calling it a touchdown. Then it turns out Cade tripped, and then pass interference on AJ Henning. That probably shouldn't have been a pass interference. A weird, weird first half, but we go in 13-0. How are you feeling at the half?
I was feeling great because I thought this lead is going to be insurmountable. The defense is going to buckle down, like, just keep doing what they've been doing. Michigan will add some more points. You're going to walk out of here with like a 21-24 victory. And although it was on the road and all that wackiness and shenanigans was going on with the officials, I still felt confident. So when they came out ready to punch, I was kind of caught off guard.
Yeah, so they take a 75-yard drive, takes them 2 minutes to start out the second half, and the defense all of a sudden is on their heels. But the defense is on their heels due to some excellent play calling. You had a great article this week that kind of talked about some tendency-breaking plays, and we were texting during the game, obviously. The plays that they scored on were not like your standard, crossers, slants, anything you're going to run in Madden. They were kind of like those plays that you have drawn up specialty plays, whether it be a tight end leaking out after chipping a block, or a wheel route.
Or 5 men in the backfield.
Or 5 men in the backfield, which we'll touch on in a minute. So they start moving the ball. It's 13-7 there. I thought we should have had 17 going into the half. I really think that's something I want to drive home in this podcast. I think we could have put this one away earlier. But then they start to move the ball on us in the second half. And kind of tell me about what you thought about the second half. You can go both sides of the ball with this one. It doesn't matter. We have no format here.
Now, Scott Frost opened up, went deep into his bag. He might as well have just been on the sideline drawing up plays. And what he was trying to do was take away the aggression of this defense, use it to their disadvantage. So he was going to, like, have the defense is flowing this way, going to bring a player in motion, but then bring him back here and then bring him around and just do all kinds of little twists and turns of the knife like that. And it worked really well. He called a brilliant game, some illegal formations. Touch on that. But no, he went really deep. Scott Frost is, as repulsive as he is to Michigan faithful, 1997, we haven't forgotten.
Sure.
It's a great play caller. And he was coaching for his job, and he is the rest of this season. So you knew he was going to go deep into his bag for this one, and they almost pulled it off. And man, Adrian Martinez is so much better than he was 3 years ago in Ann Arbor, full stop.
Oh, absolutely. He is the most dangerous. I'll give you credit for this. You said it during the game. The most dangerous rushing threat that as a quarterback that we'll see the rest of the year. I think that is accurate. His speed on the edge surprised me. A couple times he was able to beat Ojabo and Hutchinson to the edge, and they had the angle. So I don't think we'll see much of that. But yeah, in the second half of this thing, man, like, the first half was bizarro world, strange officiating, and then the second half becomes this absolute heart attack. I mean, I'll have some stats here moving forward, but the most important stat of the game, 3 beers I consumed in the first half. I think I had 8 or 9 in the second half. Most important stat of the game. That about sums it up. So in the second half, they start to run the ball a little more, but they also have, and I want to touch on this, the worst Gattis drive of the year is the interception drive. It is 3 passes. It is past Cade McNamara, put in J.J. McCarthy for a pass, and then on 3rd and 10, Cade McNamara is asked to come in for another pass, and he throws the first interception of the year. Awful, awful play calling. At the time, I had just texted you, Hassan Haskins was averaging 7 yards a carry, and Corum was averaging 7 yards a carry. Haskins was averaging 6. It was 13-7 at that time. That was really, really poor play calling that led to that interception. I'm not saying it's not Cade's fault, but that is to bring in McCarthy for a pass, then sit him again, and then he throws that interception. That was really rough play calling there, and that changed momentum.
2 points on that. 1, the player was offsides on 3rd down. Talk
he
about
was offsides. Yes, he was offsides on that play. And
officiating did not stop.
And while we're on it, not to interrupt you there, but on their touchdown previously before that, they had 5 men in the backfield. So yeah, it should have been 13-0.
Yeah. So all of that ridiculous is there. And secondly, Josh Gattis called a great game aside from that one massive screw up, which really knocked it down because that could have cost him the game at that moment. Yeah, it was so crucial because everything else around it was good. He got his mojo back once they took the lead, called a brilliant drive, but he got back to running the football. Like, let's not get cute with 2 quarterbacks throwing the ball and alternating. Like, if you want McCarthy in there, let's mix it up with a run or something like that. It was very strange. You pointed it out. And yeah, that was awful. That drive was inexcusable. I was glad he could correct that the rest of the game, though.
I did, yeah, because you called me there, I think between the 3rd and 4th quarter. And at that point, it was still obviously up in the air. And I was like, look, if we lose this thing, that interception goes on Gattis. Because that was poor play calling. That is not getting your quarterback into a rhythm when you have 2 running backs that are averaging 6 yards a carry.
Pound the ball.
Yeah, just run the ball and let's control the clock here. Now, he did settle in and he did realize the running backs need to be the one that dictate this, especially against a team like Nebraska. So I hope that was the lesson learned here. The rest of the second half, we trade scores a couple times here. But once again, I lean more towards this being a game we could have put away. Jamon Green had a chance at a pick with 7 minutes left while they're driving. They end up scoring on it, getting a touchdown on that. That if we get that, I mean, there's 7 minutes left and we're up. I think we would have been up 3 at that point. We would have been up 5 at that point.
It felt like a Michigan State kind of wacky game because that play was completely bizarre because you think he picks it. I think Hawkins was in coverage and the receiver is just standing there with the ball and starts running again. Like, all the weird plays that were going on felt like a classic Michigan State game, especially like 2018. If you go back to that and watch the deflections and everything that happened, it was so weird and nutty. Like, it just felt like we were going to lose. Like, it really did. But the resilience of this team, and especially Cade McNamara, coming back off your first interception in your second true road game and your first real true adversity of the season in a crazy environment, like, they just buckled down. And I told you, put in print, a Randy Marsh wheelbarrow toting drive. That's what they did. Put them on the table and marched down. And, man, my favorite part of the second half was Michigan has no momentum, and they do the thunderstruck with the lights off, and the team still goes nuts. Like, they don't let it affect their swagger. They don't let the score do that. They just focus on the execution. The score takes care of itself. And yeah, that was fantastic. Shout out to Braden McGregor on the air guitar.
Oh yeah. Underrated air guitar from Braden McGregor. Yeah. So we get towards the end of this thing, and it basically gets into hero ball. I mean, there's no other way to just, we didn't touch on the Mikey Sainristil catch. That was first half. That led
how
to
dare
first...
us, God.
Yeah, we got to touch on that. That was first half. So in the second half, it's basically hero ball and guys making a few plays here. The Dax interception.
Yep.
All right, so you've got that, which was the best interception since the Jordan Lewis interception. Harbaugh said the same thing. You get the Haskins hurdle, where he hurdles a guy and then runs for an additional 25 yards, doesn't break stride. That leads to a field goal, I believe. I forget which one led to a field goal, which one led to a touchdown. We only had... I forget, but regardless, that led to points. Needed to turn more of those field goal opportunities into points. I mean, you've got Cade McNamara getting stepped on by offensive linemen. You've got CJ and Baldwin dropping them down there in the end zone. And if you can get two hands on a ball, you should be able to catch it. So they're not perfect balls thrown to those guys, but catchable balls. So we should have been out in front. But then it's just hero ball, you know, like I said. And then obviously culminating with the Brad Hawkins strip fumble and fumble recovery, which is the play of the year up to this point.
Yeah, absolutely the play of the season. Martinez is fighting for every yard like he should be. And Hawkins comes up and makes an absolute brilliant play. Just go for the ball, forces the momentum-changing turnover. Should have scored a touchdown. But again, you get the points from Jay Moody and we carry on.
Yeah, my beef with that was we get the ball back with like 2 minutes. We get three and out. J.J. McCarthy comes in, fumbles it, loses 5 yards on the play. So once again, the timing of putting McCarthy in, the fact that you should have been able to end that with a touchdown there. So things to clean up, but all in all, the most resilient performance of the year. The offense takes the day, but then the defense saves the day. I mean, Hutchinson was such a menace in this game that they basically, like you kind of touched on earlier, had to accommodate for that and just accept that he was going to be in the backfield every play. And yeah, credit to them. Like they realize, okay, he's going to win every play. Martinez needs to step up and either run or throw it within under 2 seconds, because they only had about 2 seconds to throw every time.
And that makes me feel great about the defense moving forward, because I think it will allow McDonald to develop a counter to that counter. Like, okay, you want to do this? Well, we're going to switch things around, sit in a zone kind of blitz, move player here, not flow so heavy to one side with the linebackers. So I think another counter will come on top of that. And this is a great learning experience. People say you always learn more from a loss than you do from a win. But in college football, you don't have time for a loss. I'd rather learn more from a close win.
Which we will, because, you know, as we said coming into this, the one thing we wanted to see is how do we do against a better passing offense? And we saw against a good play caller that has, like, interesting ways to get, you know, mismatches, get our linebackers. Like, Nakai Hill-Green covering a tight end or having to cover anyone, really, is a mismatch.
Yeah,
like, we're not there yet. Yeah, we're not there yet. So a lot learned in this game, especially on defense, things that we can improve upon, but also reasons to be optimistic on offense. You know, our worst passing game, but also I would say the worst receiver game that we've had of the year, and they still got it done.
I say more on the defense. Was this Cade's career high or second, probably behind Rutgers last year, I'd bet?
Yeah, I think it was his career high passing yards, but one interception, no touchdowns, not really.
I put more on the receivers, though, than I do Cade.
Honestly, I'm with you. Yeah, you and I are kind of on an island there, that if you rewatch this game, there's a lot left on the table from our receivers in this game. And not having Ronnie Bell or Roman Wilson was dramatic. But when guys were open, they made catches. Nobody missed an open opportunity where it's like, oh, you have to catch that. But there were a lot of like 50-50 balls that didn't go our way.
It's okay. Our boy Eric All continues to rise.
That's our dude, and needs to continue to be a dude.
Yeah.
You know, not a huge statistical game in this one, but Eric All, like a couple great catches, turning third downs into first downs, coming across the middle. He's open a lot. Yeah. I'd like to see some of those contested balls, you know, like that went to Daylon Baldwin after the Mikey Sainristil still catch. I'd like to see Eric All get a shot, because he hasn't got a shot yet in the end zone. What can he do at 6'3 and a half, 6'4? I'd like to see that.
He had the huge third down conversion on the answering drive after the Nebraska took the lead. I believe it was the next play resulted in Blake Corum eating corn in the end zone.
Oh, Blake Corum eating corn was just a top five celebration, and it's not 2, 3, 4, or 5.
It's not 1, 2, 3, or 4.
I'm telling you, that was a great celebration by Blake. Man, all right, so let's give, we called our players of the game and scores of the game. I had it 31-17, and I said it was going to be a Corum and Ojabo game. I think this is the Haskins game and the Hawkins game.
Completely with you. It has to be Haskins and Hawkins. Man, Hassan Haskins is the most underappreciated running back that Michigan has ever had.
He is. And we texted this during the game that he's a better power guy than Devion Smith was, plus he has Higdon speed.
Yeah, he has everything in his arsenal, just a complete back. He's gotten so much better in his time at Michigan, from being linebacker to, at one time, he was behind Ben Van Summeren on the running back depth chart. I can't stress that enough. I believe,
dude, it's crazy, and we're going to need him in games like this. Like against Michigan State, I think that those runs that, like, oh, that should be 2 yards, but instead it's 4.5. Like, that means so much. And in this game, just the fact that he would get hit after 2 yards, same as their running back, but their running back went down at 2 yards. Hassan Haskins went for 4.5 every time he got hit after two. And that ended up being the difference. We rushed for an average of 4.9 to their 4.4 in this, both of our running backs averaged over 6.
Is that the most frustrating part of this team, that we have Hassan Haskins, who's so dominant in short yardage, and our red zone efficiency is abysmal?
It is frustrating. Some of the red zone calls are a little frustrating. But like we were saying earlier, a lot of this is not having an elite wide receiver right now.
True.
And not having somebody that's your go-to. Like, CJ is coming along. I think he could get there next year. But I don't think we're going to see that from CJ this year. He's had a lot of attempts.
What's a team's counter if you put Eric All at the X?
I don't know. I mean, you need to put their best coverage safety on him, I guess. I don't know. Like, I think that we need to start utilizing the fact that we like Schoonmaker and Honningford, and Eric All might be a better receiving threat than Daylon Baldwin right now.
He might be. Schoonmaker, that's my guy. I absolutely adored the game he had. His blocking was I never thought, you know, 2-3 years ago, Schoonmaker was going to be this much of a contributor, but you almost can't take him off the field.
Right. No, you're right. And especially in this game where we played 5 guards, having Schoonmaker and Honningford and All as more than reliable blockers, excellent blockers at this point. I will say that they're above average, especially Honningford as a blocker, being a former tackle, is an incredible blocker. But All is a receiving threat that I'd like to see utilized more. Hopefully, if Roman Wilson can come back, I won't be as down on this receiving core as I am after this game. And I'm not knocking, I'm saying it's a bad receiving core, but I'm just letting you know, Michigan State, Penn State, and Ohio State have legitimate receiving threats. I don't see that on this team unless Roman Wilson gets there. Bell, different animal, obviously.
I think receiver is the biggest area of improvement the offense needs. I think every other position group offensively is set. Line, backs, quarterback, tight end, set. Defensively, where do you think they need the most improvement? Corner?
It's definitely corner at this point. Now, the linebackers really got swallowed up in this, but a lot of it was freshmen being freshmen. You know, we're playing Junior Colson and Hill Green now almost exclusively. Like, those are our linebackers, and those are both freshmen. Junior Colson being a true freshman, Hill Green being a redshirt freshman, I believe.
Yep.
But regardless, this is their first year playing, and it showed in this one. Colson shows so many flashes, and he looks like he's not a freshman, but he is. And like, when you ask them to cover Samori Toure or their tight end Austin Allen, and they're doing it on like these interesting kind of route concepts where Austin Allen, it was an illegal formation on that one too.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like, it's tough for those linebackers. So I'll say it's corners, because they also got beaten a couple times in this. But linebackers are right there with them. It's basically just pass defense against teams that have, you know, more advanced route combinations than Iowa.
I think Iowa catching a stray. Yeah. I think the linebackers, like, this was a great learning experience. You talked about that already, like, to prepare for the teams down the road. And I'm with you, it's corners. But as we say that, we need to give credit to our defensive tackles, because that was one of our biggest question marks coming into this season. And Hinton, Mozzie Smith, Mike Morris, Jeter, those guys have been absolute dogs the last 2 weeks.
They're improving too.
Yeah.
So it's to the point now where it's very clearly the strength of this defense is the defensive line. We were Pro Football Focused, highest graded defensive line over Georgia this week. Over the course of the season, we're number two graded defensive line. Once again, Pro Football Focus obviously has it in, or absolutely loves Michigan. But nonetheless, I mean, that's based on whatever. It's based on something. And we've seen it with Ojabo and Hutchinson being very difficult to deal with. So I'll buy that. And I definitely buy that the strength of this team is D-line. Smith and Hinton owe Mike McDonald some money, because now they're NFL draft prospects, where before this year it was like, I don't know if you can start them in a Big Ten game.
Exactly. And I think, to your point as well, I think maybe we've been a little too down on Ojabo's progression and just kind of forgetting. I think he picked up football like his junior year of high school when he moved to the United States from Scotland.
It was 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's like his fifth or sixth year of ever playing football. And it's like, now he's good. It's like, yeah, now he's good. Most people are 12 at this time in their life. Like, so he's just catching up to everybody. It's, I don't know how he didn't get the strip sack when he hit Martinez clean on. He even brought the hands down. I don't know how he held on to the football, but man, all over them in the first half.
I know the play. And Hutchinson, while once again not recording a sack, was such a menace in this game. Like we said earlier, like, you have to adjust to the fact that you're just not going to have more than a second to get there. You almost need to kind of push him back out away from the quarterback and just buy that extra half second, because you're not lasting for 3 seconds in that pocket. You're just not. Like, it'll be interesting. I can't wait to see against Michigan State, Penn State, and especially Ohio State, how it looks. But now every offensive lineman that he's gone up against, he's absolutely destroyed. So I'm totally bought in on this defensive line. I think the linebackers, I'm worried about Ohio State. I'm worried about Michigan State with those linebackers. But there's plenty to like between your defensive line and your safeties, and a growing confidence in Vincent Gray.
Yeah, and the linebackers won't be tasked strict man-to-man all game, so I do feel better. It's just about them getting caught schematically once or twice in a game that worries you with those teams' big playability. But it's not like 18 or 19 when you just know, no matter what we do, they're going to be man-to-man. So it feels right. A little better there. And also, shout out to Gamon Green in this game for that tackle on the last drive. We talked about it off-air, the way he diagnoses that screen and just comes downhill, burst through the block and makes a huge play. He and Vincent Gray, while they're progressing in coverage, are dominant in stopping the run.
Really good tackling defensive backs. I agree with you there. All right, that's a good time to take a break. When we come back, we got a bye week. Nobody to preview this week, but there's so much more to talk about. Plus, we want to give out some mid-season awards as we are halfway through this thing. We'll talk about that. We'll look around the Big Ten and look around the college football landscape in general. As Michigan is a top 10 team, and in the second half of this season, it's time to start talking about the college football playoff. Great place to be. We'll talk about that when we get back. Well, welcome back to Out of the Blue in the second half of this bad boy. It's bye week, which actually, I'm pretty pleased with this. We already spoke last week about the timing of this bye week being perfect for the team. It's great for me, too. I need to reset after that Nebraska game.
Yeah, my lungs, my liver, my life, everything just needs to, recover, get back up to par with this team. It's improvement week. So like you said, self-improvement, self-care, all of it. Drinking kombucha on the podcast. Let's go.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm drinking some pumpkin stout right now, trying to get my liver. So if you can handle this, you can handle anything, because it's really not good.
I normally don't speak to men that say pumpkin to me, but you're an exception here.
Not a big pumpkin spice guy, but trying to get with the times. All right. So we got a lot to cover here in the second half. I want to start out with some mid-season awards, though. We were talking about, the current iteration of Michigan football. I want to stay on that. We did our preseason award picks, and now I want to kind of visit this at mid-season and see what has changed. So I got some categories for you, if you are ready.
Throw them at me. I haven't even looked at the doc. I wanted to be fresh.
All right. We are starting with the one that was your category that you came up with before the year, the John Runyon Award for Revolving Door of Awfulness. Somebody that looked like a player that was going to come in and then be put out as soon as they came in. Just a player that couldn't contribute, couldn't do anything right, but now looks like an absolute stalwart. Hopefully I explained that right. A player that sucked and now doesn't suck.
There it is. There it is. In layman's terms, we're talking layman's. John Runyon, 2018 Notre Dame was terrible. One of the worst performances I've ever seen from a Michigan offensive lineman. And then he finishes the year first team all conference.
And he's starting for the Packers.
Yeah. So the John Runyon Award for Revolving Door of Awfulness, but now could be all conference. Offensively, I think our leader in the clubhouse is not Eric Gall.
It's Andrew Vastardis. Now, the only caveat to that would be Andrew Vastardis was never awful.
Correct.
Andrew Vastardis was serviceable and now is amazing. So I think he qualifies.
He was wildly mediocre at best. The man has seen three presidents while at Michigan, and now he might be first or second team all conference based on how you judge the Iowa center who might win the Remington. So yeah, he's great. Eric Gall, close second. I don't think he has all conference potential this year, but next year, I think so.
Yeah, I would say Vastardis' biggest year-to-year improvement, that coveted fifth-year to sixth-year improvement that we all hope to see.
We've all seen it.
We've all seen it. Yeah, I mean, he's been there for three presidents, and then this year goes from a mildly serviceable offensive lineman. I called him before this year the weak link. I said, I think Trevor Keegan should be starting at guard so you could move Zinter to center. I'm owning up for it. I am so happy to be wrong about Andrew Vastardis. And you're absolutely right. The most he might qualify for a different award later. So if you want to talk somebody that was not good last year and is good this year, it's Eric Aull.
Correct.
And then on defense, it's probably Chris Hinton.
I'll give you Chris Hinton is a great one because the way he's developed these last 2 weeks, he's been so physical and so dominant with the penetrations on the passes and really stuffing the run. The only other one I'd give you on defense is, of course, Vincent Gray.
That was your pick at the beginning of the season. Actually, our picks were Vincent Gray and Eric Aull at the beginning of the season. We're not far off. I'm close to being there with you on Gray, but I'm sold on Hinton. I'm not yet sold on Gray. Let's see how he does against Jahan Dotson, Jalen Naylor, Reed, and then Garrett Wilson and Olave.
Let's just say I'm one Michigan State game away with Vincent Gray because he's going to be tasked to guard like five potential first round receivers. Like he's going to lose some, but he needs to win more than he loses. That's the thing.
Yes. Oh, I mean, for opportunity, his opportunity is massive in the second half of this season. Same with Vastardis and Runyon. I mean, Vastardis he's entrenched. He's not going anywhere. Eric Aull, you and I are going to keep preaching it every week until they do it. He's your best remaining mismatch that's yet to be tapped. But yeah, I mean, I like those awards. I'm not going to go Vastardis. I'm going to go Eric Aull because I think there's another award Vastardis might be there for. All right.
And that's I have one sleeper.
Sleeper, hit me.
Jake Moody.
Ooh, I didn't think he was awful. It was hard to know what to think of Moody because he had the great freshman run, inconsistent sophomore year, and then now is just a stalwart. But great, great addition.
Yeah, last year he made 25% of his kicks.
Yeah. So last year, aberration doesn't exist.
Sorry.
Next award. This is the reason I didn't give it to Vastardis. Biggest surprise, biggest positive surprise and negative surprise.
Offensively, Vastardis, there's the award you're talking about.
Why I'm giving it to Vastardis here, and I'm giving it to Eric Aull for the guy that couldn't play and now is really good.
Excellent. I won't fight you there. Vastardis, offense, biggest positive. Biggest negative so far for me is Cornelius Johnson.
That's so interesting. You and I are on the same page with this because people are talking. They just look at the box scores, and they're like, yeah, but Michigan might have something with Baldwin and Johnson. And I'm like, that is someone that's just watching the box scores because they will catch the ball if they were wide open, but neither of them is a game breaker. So I'm with you. I do like that pick.
He has like big play potential, but it's so up and down, so hit and miss because had the big catch against NIU, had the big flea flicker against Wisconsin, but it's so up and down. He's not physical. Like the contact with him, he almost shies away from it as a receiver. And I expected a lot. Maybe I expected too much from him. Maybe it was my expectations were too high, but he's been a player that has just been, you know, a little negative for me.
I am with you, and I think people will probably push back on this, but that's likely to what you said. I think we had really high expectations for CJ. I thought he could be the next Nico Collins, but if CJ caught every ball that he got two hands on this year, his numbers would be massive. I'm just telling you that. I've gone back and rewatched every one of these games at least twice, most of them three times, and I've been documenting Cade's misses just because of the conversation that's being had here, and a lot of them are dropped or could be caught, or if the guy were a game breaker, if he were like a Jaden Reed or a Jalen Naylor, he makes those plays. So I think the drop off from some of those receivers to CJ and Baldwin is pretty large. I agree.
In defense of CJ, though, he's a number two being tasked with number one responsibilities.
No doubt. Yeah, he should be as a number two. If Ronnie Bell's on the other side of him, that's probably awesome.
Yeah, that's absolutely what we want. But losing Ronnie Bell forced him into a role that he's just not quite yet ready for.
I'm with you. I agree with you. Andrew Vastardis, biggest positive surprise. Biggest negative surprise. So you went with CJ, and I think you're on the right track there. I am going to go with, This is an interesting one. It's two recruits, and it is Donovan Green Warren and Andre Selden. And you could throw DJ Turner into there. We've recruited the cornerback position pretty well, but we still have two three-stars manning the outside, former three-stars in Vincent Gray and Jamon Green. And now Green Warren, who was a borderline five-star, probably a five-star in most outlets, and Selden, also borderline five-star, neither one has really seen the field. Neither one is challenging. DJ Turner looks to be way behind these guys. So my biggest negative is that nobody is stepping up for cornerback depth.
That's a good one. It's very, very alarming. Safety depth is awesome with Moten, solid. Page, and Morant. Feel really good about that. But no, you're right, because who's next up? Rod
Turner would be the next up, but then guys Rod that Moore? We're seeing. Yeah, then they're playing a freshman safety, Rod Moore, above Green Warren and Andre Selden. Your two biggest hits in the secondary in the last couple of years. Neither one can get on the field.
That's very alarming, especially for the future. Two other positives I want to discuss are Nakai Hill-Green, who not many even had penciled in starting this year.
True.
And Luke Schoonmaker, who you and I just, especially myself, just, we love.
You love
this
him.
Very pro Schoon podcast here. Just what he's done in the blocking game is very underappreciated. And Nakai Hill-Green taking over the starting role and being very good. He has his weaknesses, as does every player, but his positives greatly outweigh the negatives.
Sure. Yeah. And he's coming off his roughest game, so maybe not the week I want to touch on him, but I am really excited about the future of the linebacker position with them. All right, moving forward. Actually, before we move forward, got to talk about home field apparel. Working with these cats for a minute. I'm wearing them right now. The temperature has officially turned into hoodie weather, so that means I'm in hoodies for the rest of my life. If you're a Michigan fan like me, and I'm assuming you are, they've got the old school and new school designs. Comfortable, affordable. It gets there quickly. I mean, it's a problem. It's always sitting out in front of my house. You can get 20% off your first purchase with MNB at checkout at homefieldapparel.com. All right, moving forward on the awards, unless you had anybody else you wanted to talk about there.
No, I think that's really it. I would say AJ Henning, but right now the jury's still out.
That's how I feel about him and Hill-Green. Both of them kind of had their roughest game, but I am high on both moving forward. That leads us well into the next one. Best freshman. Could be redshirt freshman too, because last year we're not counting, although that then puts Blake Corum in the mix.
Yeah, Blake Corum is disqualified.
Blake Corum is disqualified, yeah, obviously. So, best freshman.
Greg Crippen, no, I'm kidding.
This is a pro-Greg Crippen podcast.
This is a very pro-Greg Crippen podcast. So, it could be redshirt freshman, so second-year player, if they're not counting last season. Roman Wilson?
Yeah, Roman Wilson's been impressive. I'll go McCarthy. I'll go J.J. McCarthy.
I'm going to go Wilson over McCarthy just because of I think he's going to explode the second half if he's healthy this season. I think he's going to do a step.
I think he showed something in that Wisconsin game.
Yeah, but I'm getting ahead, though. This is for the first six games. So, no, McCarthy's a great one. Roman Wilson's a great one.
I got one more for you. Jenkins.
Ow, great, great, great answer. That's so good. I'm jealous of that. What's Mike Morris?
Mike Morris, I believe redshirt freshman. Hold on one second. Mike Morris, Michigan football. I think he's a redshirt freshman. Yeah, he's up there.
All of this defensive line depth, we had no idea. Chris Jenkins had two huge plays in the Nebraska game.
He is out. He's a third-year redshirt freshman defensive end because he used that extra redshirt. So okay. He can't count, unfortunately. But Jenkins is a true freshman.
Jenkins, when he came out to start in the Northern Illinois game, you and I were like, oh, okay.
I'm sorry, whom is this?
I love that versatility, though, with Mike McDonald. Like, he's just mixing up starters and role players, like, interchangeably, depending on situation and scheme. So that's excellent.
Junior Colson gets my nod on defense, but I wanted to talk on Chris Jenkins. So on offense, it's McCarthy, and for me on defense, it's my boy Colson. Colson is now a starter.
Yeah, Colson has been all planet. He's a true freshman. And
freshman, just like Jenkins, true freshman.
And I pushed back a little bit on you during that in the offseason. I'm like, dude, freshman linebackers never, ever start here.
I told you he's different, man. This dude is just different. He doesn't look like a freshman. He doesn't play like a freshman. He's been in on two turnovers. This dude is going to be all world.
Got one more for you. Year.
Hit me.
RJ Moten.
Yeah, RJ Moten has played a ton of ball, and we have not said his name in a negative context yet. I like that.
No, he's another one we didn't expect much from at all this season because Makari Page seemed to be the third safety. But no, he's really taken over that role and played a ton in the secondary this season as a second year. I mean, yeah, because we're not counting last year frat player.
Yeah, just seems like another in the long line of really solid safeties that we've had, but potential to be a lot better. You know, he's a highly recruited guy.
Yeah, also, right. Donovan Edwards.
I know, a lot of freshmen. But my actual award winners are McCarthy and Colson. Who are your actual award winners?
My actual award winners are Colson and Roman Wilson.
Okay, I like it. All right, position coach. Position coach that has really shined for you thus far.
Easy. Running away. You know who I'm going to say.
No, I don't, because there's two.
There are two, but come on. You know what, like.
I assume it's Sherrone Moore.
It's Sherrone Moore. Sherrone Moore is my guy. He had the lineman doing the Ric Flair woo chant before the game. Andrew Vastartis might be my favorite player on the team. The improvement, the physicality, the room. I love everything about the offensive line and Sherrone Moore. Also, you know where Sherrone Moore played in college?
I do not.
He blocked for Adrian Peterson and DeMarco Murray at Oklahoma.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I learned that this week. I was like, oh, that's who he blocked for. Oh, okay, got it.
So you've got the guy that blocked for Adrian Peterson and then Mike Hart. Yeah. Holy running game savants.
Exactly. So I did not think the jump would be this great, but apparently there was a big disconnect with Ed Werner in this room because the players love him. They go to bat for him any chance they get. And we had five guards play in one game, and we did not see a drop-off.
I mean, I can't really argue with you there. And you and I were both Werner guys. When we got rid of Werner, we're like, why? That has been so great. There's no way you upgrade. You upgraded from Ed Werner.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming. Sherrone Moore is an upgrade. I hope we can keep him around. I mean, honestly, at this point, here's an interesting superlative. All right, we win 10 games, beat Michigan State, lose to Penn State and Ohio State. Do you promote Sherrone Moore over Gattis next year to keep Moore?
Depends how the offense plays out. I have to see all the right, score. If we're losing 34-6, then yeah, but I know where your head's at with Gattis and Moore.
Yeah. I'm already thinking two steps ahead, baby. Chestnut checkers. Sherrone Moore is probably number one, but it is close because Jay Harbaugh special teams, as we mentioned in the first half of this podcast, and then Mike Hart, you know, the prodigal son returning and having the best running back room that we've had in over a decade and having a team that can win just running the ball. Literally every team on our schedule remaining, if we run the ball to the best of our ability, we can beat. That's how good our running back room is. But that's also, you know, attributed to Sherrone Moore. So it's hard to pick there, chicken or the egg. I'll ride with you that it's Sherrone Moore, but I think it's close and it's a three-way race and then it's running away. Oh, but Mike McDonald.
That's what I was about to say.
He's coming off his worst game. I think that's why he didn't get brought up first. If you asked us after Wisconsin, I bet it's closer.
But it's Mike McDonald coming off his worst game, and they still had those two last stops when we needed them. Right. Last year, Michigan was 95th in scoring defense, and currently we are 9th, and that's including garbage time.
It is tough, but I think that recency bias, we're recording this midway, but the last game we saw was Nebraska, where we played five guards. So I'm going to ride with Sherrone Moore. But, man, three other guys that have really stepped up, and I love Hart, Harbaugh, and McDonald right now.
Let me make one. I agree it's Sherrone Moore because that was my choice, but let me make one pro Mike McDonald take. If you have Ed Werner coaching the offensive line and Mike McDonald on defense, is there a huge drop-off this season? I know there is a drop-off, but how big is it? Now,
I don't think it's as big as if we kept Brown and replaced Moore.
That's the thing. So is it? I think it would be far worse if it was Moore and Don Brown.
That's a very good McDonald argument.
Yeah,
and I'm going to change mine to Mike McDonald, but with the caveat that like what I saw in this last game shows that there's a lot of room for improvement.
That's a great way to put a lot of room for improvement. But yeah, the changing from Don Brown to Mike McDonald can't be understated.
That is probably the single most important one. So good point. Good point. Yeah, if you're talking about the guy that's maybe the best at his job right now, it's Moore, but Moore also came in with the benefit of having Ed Wariner really teaching these guys very well. Like, they knew the fundamentals.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe his job was easier than McDonald's was.
Could be. Didn't have to change an entire scheme or anything. It's like,
so. There's a lot to that. So I'm going to switch to McDonald. That was a great point you made right there. Enough to sway me.
All right.
Biggest wild card for the second half of the season. Player. You can give me an offense and a defense.
Offense, Cade McNamara. Defense, Kamon Green.
Okay. Explain your positions and I'll give you mine.
So offensively, I was deciding between quarterback or receiver, but if we can start distributing the ball around to a bunch of different people, take the pressure off the number one, and if Cade can really open it up and really keep that confidence back there, then I think that could change things drastically for this team. Because Michigan State, as we touched on probably off the air, about how awful their pass defense was, that's how you exploit that team, you exploit some other ones, gives you a little bit more balance. And then defensively, it has to be one of the corners. I think if one of those corners is incredibly weak, then they're going to get picked on and picked on, no matter if you run any kind of zone. Like, they're just going to be a liability out there. And he's a little more undersized, a little more inexperienced. So I think it would be on Green, because of the receivers you mentioned we're all going to see this year. And Cade, because he has the ball every play, almost every play, and it's going to dictate a lot.
I like those answers. I'm gonna zag a little bit. On offense, I'm going to go Roman Wilson.
I like that.
Because basically what we've been saying for the majority of this podcast, I think that as our receivers sit right now with CJ number one, Baldwin two, Sainer still three, I would put that in the lower half of Big Ten receiving cores. It's not a great receiving core. Despite the depth that we started with, AJ Henning has not proven to be a reliable receiver. Great, you know, as a punt returner. Okay, good as a punt returner. We can't give him great yet. So I think Roman Wilson, if he can break out and be a contested ball guy and has a lot of speed, seems to be more physical than CJ already, I think that opens it up for your boy Cade. And I think that's going to help him out a lot, because I've seen enough of Cade to know that he is quality. Like, I think that he's Shea Patterson with a more accurate arm that can't run. Like, subtract, if you're doing Madden, and like Cade Mack was like a 70 in running, but like a 70 in passing. If you took Cade McNamara's passing stats down and just added them to the pass, like his running stats down and added them to the passing, it's an exact equivalent quarterback. Like, he's a better passer than Shea Patterson ever was. So I'm good there. So Roman Wilson. And then on defense, I totally agree with what you're saying. If Jamon Green can break out, it's the best thing for this team. But give me Junior Colson. Junior Colson can be a game changer, he's gonna start to really show up.
I like that a lot. And with the receivers, well, I think just because Sainer still plays the slot, I still think he's our number two right now above Baldwin. And I think he's gonna get more looks after that diving catch and how well he blocks everybody.
Great point.
So that's a good positive for the team moving forward. I like the Colson pick because that can change things in coverage and running with running backs out of the backfield, as well as stopping the run. Do you have any deep sleepers? One player you think we may have seen, may not have seen, that could change a game this year? I'm going to give you two. One's not so deep. One is pretty deep. So
go ahead. Give me a second.
Donovan Edwards, not so deep. I think he could have a big game-breaking play.
Yep.
Deep sleeper, Andrell Anthony. They say he flashes at least one in crazy play in practice every week. I mean, every day. So they say that, and I think eventually that's going to get him on the field.
I mean, they say that he's absolutely grinding the practice field with McCarthy and Edwards, too. He says those dudes are absolute grinders. Those are really great picks. I could definitely see those guys making a play. On defense, give me Mike Morris.
Mike Morris is one of my favorite players in this team.
Yeah, I mean, Hinton and Smith, you could almost say, but those are starters, so it's hard to be like, hey, deep cut, one of these starters is going to do something. But those guys are coming on. So give me Mike Morris on defense. I think that he really forms a good triumvirate on the defensive line. And for offense, I love your calls there. I'm going to go Eric All. I know that's a bit cheating. He's the starting guy, but he's a sleeper because that's too cheap. I can't do that. We've been talking about him the whole time. Christian Dixon.
There's one. He's also been recently joined the Andrell Anthony, Edwards, McCarthy on the practice field.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll go Christian Dixon there. Yeah, another guy that's starting to show up, starting to get some touches. We need receiver help.
Honestly, and I'm to your defensive line point, I'm almost there to have the discussion. Is Jess Spate better than Wilton Spate?
Not yet, no.
We're getting there. I'm not ready to have it yet, but he's playing a ton on this team and playing very well.
I think we could be better with our Wilton Spate discussion. The guy was pretty good before he got hurt.
We need to be better
towards him.
It's, you know, we like to look back fondly, remember the good times, but I do remember the bad times as well. So
I mean, he was at best a game manager, but I digress. We're getting off topic here. But Jess Spate starting to get some meaningful
respect for Jess Spate on this podcast.
Yes. All right. Last category: offensive MVP, defensive MVP, midway through the season, and who do you think is the MVP at the end of the season?
Offensive MVP is the offensive line, or you could say Andrew Vastardis. I'm just going to ride there. I've been riding this train and tooting this horn, so I don't need to pontificate any further. Defensively, let's not be cute here. It's Aiden Hutchinson. He's the best defensive player in college football. End of story.
Offensively is Blake Corum. Defensively is Aiden Hutchinson. I'm not trying to get cute here either. Blake Corum is a product of the offensive line, but also he's a star. We haven't had that ever.
I didn't mean to step on you, but it's so hard for me to decipher between Corum or Haskins.
Now it is. You're right. But also, like, they gave Haskins more run in this game. Had you have given Corum more run to the outside? How many times did I text you time to run Corum to the outside in that Nebraska game? Over or under six?
I don't know what's going on, who's banged up or anything. And with him doing kickoffs and other things, I don't mind it as much right now. But you're right. This back half of the season, he needs to be getting those touches to the outside. But it's a 1A, 1B backfield. But I think if you're going to say Corum is, I think you got to handcuff him. I think they got to do it together.
Oh, I agree. I mean, Corum is not Corum without Haskins. So, all right, we got a little bit more time here. Let's look around the Big Ten. As it stands right now, 50% of the top 10 is made up of Big Ten teams. 40% of the top 10 is made up of Big Ten East teams. Obviously, we're going to cannibalize each other, and this is all going to sort itself out. But as it stands right now, the Big Ten is far and away the most impressive conference in the country. And this is a bit of a down week. Both Michigan and Ohio State have bye weeks. But how do you look at this Big Ten, especially after that Iowa-Penn State game that really gave us an idea about who's who in this conference?
The Big Ten is stacked. Iowa's not the best team. Penn State was going to win by 20 if Sean Clifford doesn't get hurt.
Agreed. So,
conference is great. Iowa's defense is great. They're still a very solid team, despite how, you know, Kirk Ferentz just falling out of favor with dumb comments. But no, the Big Ten's a great conference. I love to see it as a whole. I root for very few of those teams at large. You know, just rooting for the conference loyalty. Like, I like to see Iowa do okay, Penn State until we play them. The other two teams, not at all. But it's good for the conference, good for the resume.
It is. As of right now, the majority outlets have us ranked fifth in the Big Ten, which just goes to show you that being in the Big Ten East, I'm not going to pontificate on it and make a big deal out of it, but if you're leading the Big Ten right now, you've got to look for a way to improve this, because obviously you're not helping your chances when we're the fifth ranked team in the Big Ten right now, and we are the fourth ranked team in the Big Ten East. We're going to cannibalize one another. That's definitely going to happen. And you're going to hurt your chances of someone getting into the college football playoff. I agree with what you said about Iowa. I'd much rather play Iowa than Penn State, assuming that Sean Clifford is there. That's why Penn State did not fall very far in the rankings after that loss to Iowa. If you watch that game, Iowa is the most plodding and Big Ten offense that has ever existed in the history of Big Ten. And Ohio State now is really starting to look like they do every year. They look susceptible early on and now look like a juggernaut. So things rounding into form to about where we expected, but we come into this 6-0. So here we go.
Michigan and Michigan State are both the wild cards in this equation, because Penn State, Iowa, and Ohio State were all expected to be good. But the two teams from Michigan have really shaken things up, because last year we combined for 3 wins. Penn State had one, but they still got the respect early on and were ranked. So I love that we can come in here and shake things up and, you know, have both teams ranked in the top 10 halfway through the season.
there's a glorious outcome where Michigan State's the wild card and gets Penn State, and then we're the wild card and takes out Ohio State, and this is just the wildest year ever. However, there's also an outcome where this is all the biggest disaster ever for the Big Ten. You know, like things could play out, especially with Alabama losing, you know, which we can kind of talk about and start to get into a bigger picture discussion here. Like you've got Iowa that no one's buying as the number two team. I'm sorry. I'm not buying that.
No, the defense is good. The offense is very susceptible, but this is going to make you a little excited. This is back to Michigan State, but Desmond Howard just posted a picture doing interviews with Michigan players. So it looks like College Game Day is going to be in town in 2 weeks.
It's about time, man. I can't believe we haven't had anything yet, but yeah, let's get some, I mean, we've got big, big games coming up. So it'd be nice to get the Big Ten in town. All right, looking at the standings right now, the Big Ten East, absolutely absurd, as we've already said. The worst team is Rutgers. Actually, the worst team is Indiana, but they're rated a little higher in the FBS. They're 2-3 right now. Rutgers sitting at 3-3. On the other side, in the Big Ten West, Iowa, 6-0. The second-ranked team is Minnesota, who lost to Bowling Green at 3-2. The drop-off in the Big Ten West and, like, the schedule that they have to play the rest of the way compared to ours is really going to decide things here.
I can't wait to see Scott Frost coaching for his life against Iowa, because that win might be what dictates whether he stays there or he's in the unemployment line.
I called that one as I was watching it. Granted, I was pretty drunk by the time the Michigan game started.
As you should be.
Yes, absolutely. But I absolutely think Nebraska could beat Iowa. I think anyone in the Big Ten could beat Iowa on a given day. Like, their defense is solid, but that offense is atrocious. I'm sorry.
It's not good. And their secondary is really good. Their front seven, I think there's some room to get them. But it's like, it's really difficult to throw on them. So just don't throw on them, you know? Just do what Michigan does.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so expanding this to a bigger picture here, you got Alabama losing to unranked Texas A&M. The biggest upset of the year, I would say. I mean, no one saw that one coming. Maybe early in the year they did, but then A&M replaces their quarterback, still finds a way to beat Alabama. When their quarterback, I watched him against Colorado, winless Colorado, he couldn't do anything. And then he goes out and lights up Alabama. So hard to know what to think about them. Oklahoma benches number one recruit, five-star Spencer Rattler for Caleb Williams, and it looks like that's going to stick. And now Oklahoma looks like a different team. You've got San Diego State University, run by one Brady Hoke, undefeated right now. Undefeated. Cincinnati is undefeated and thinking that they have an end to the playoff, but you still got an absolute, like, daunting look at the – I mean, it's a wild year. It is a wild year. So where do you see this all playing up? Can Cincinnati undefeated get in, assuming the Big Ten East cannibalizes itself? And still, no matter what, Big Ten East is getting someone in this, right?
Big Ten East is getting somebody in, unless the wheels fall off or Ohio State gets two losses and then wins the conference and gets left out. Something like that. It has to get real screwy. But I want chaos. Just give me all the chaos, inject it into me. It'd be nice if Michigan could just go undefeated and eliminate that part of my life. But Cincinnati does have a tough test of Tulane and SMU coming up. So watch out for that. I'm not a fan of the G5 teams getting into the playoff. I'm sorry. Just not going to happen. And no, it's going to be nuts, man. The SEC is going to figure it out. The Big Ten's going to figure it out. ACC's out of it. Big 12's got two teams left, I guess, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, that could get in, fighting for both undefeated. But it's really the Big Ten and SEC battle, with like Cincinnati and the Big 12 just clinging on for dear life.
Yeah, and I mean, Pac-12, I would say Oregon would need to win every single remaining game in order to have a team to represent anyone. I'm not really worried about the Pac-12. I mean, this looks like it's going to come down to, does the SEC get two teams in or does the Big Ten get two teams in? And does Cincinnati find a way to crack it? That's how it looks midway through this. Obviously, things are going to change and teams are going to beat up on each other. But I mean, we're square in the middle of this thing here, halfway through the season, where you and I predicted us to be 5-1, maybe 4-2. And now we've got us at 5-1. So let's revisit that. The preseason predictions, the quarter by quarter, we both had us at 5-1 ending here. Both of us predicted a loss to Wisconsin because we thought beginning the season. I thought it was an 8-4 team. You thought it was a 9-3 team. We are really trending well to your side of things, 9-3 or 10-2.
We're trending, yeah, 9-3 looks like the basement at this point. If it's not 9-3, something really bad happened, because you have Northwestern, Indiana, and Maryland remaining. All three should be wins. That's 9 right there. So it looks like we're going to exceed even my projection, and I was the most optimistic person
you were
alive.
No, I mean, I didn't think you were insane with 9. But some people did. Michael Spath had us at 6 wins. A lot of people had us at 7-5. 8-4 was about the consensus, and that's where I put us, because I thought Washington was going to be a bigger test.
Yeah, Michael Spath
Michael Spath had us at 6-6. We do not forget. People don't forget, Jeremy.
Keep going. I interrupted you.
No, you're fine. So, I mean, honestly, where we're at right now is better than either of us predicted, which how could that not put us in a position to be enthusiastic and optimistic going into the second half of this thing?
I think the biggest win of this season wasn't on the field. It's just the culture. It's Jim Harbaugh. It's the coaching staff. Every move he made was right. I've never seen a coach have such a fractured culture and be the one to repair it. Like, very rarely do you ever see somebody break something and then put it back together. And he's more than done that. Like, now he does need the results. Like, it's great to have a good culture and kids graduating, but wins matter above all. And but you and I said before, if keep this train rolling and beat Michigan State, no matter what, that's a good season for what we expected coming into this thing. It's a great season.
You're so right. And I want to continue to reiterate that if we win the next two, and win the other two that we're supposed to win, that is a 10-win season. That would be beating Michigan State. That would be beating Northwestern, Wisconsin. That would mean beating Nebraska in a tough game. And then assuming we lose to Penn State and Ohio State, who right now I think have better teams than us. I mean, that's just not saying anything controversial there. I think they just have more talent. And if you went by the recruiting rankings, they do. But that is an awesome season in a year we thought was a rebuild season that was prepping to next year.
Yeah, and it's been very quiet around the Harbaugh controversy. Not many people talking. We still want to wait and see, but he does need to be commended for the job he's done. I mean, completely changed everything. When you flash back to a year ago and a fan base was broken, everything seemed broken with this school.
If we beat Michigan State and we start out 8-0, is Harbaugh's seat hot, warm, cool, or cold?
I think it's cool. If we beat them before the end of the season, and we haven't played Ohio State yet?
Yeah.
Cold. Absolutely. It's ice cold.
It's ice cold. Yeah. And if we win at 10-2 and our only two losses are at Penn State and to Ohio State, is his seat hot, warm, cool, or cold?
It's cool. Just a little pressure to beat Ohio State. Depending on that performance is, you can't get blown out. But it's cool. But it's not,
I agree.
It's not hot or warm. Like, don't be stupid. Like, don't be dumb. You're like, what he, yeah, he's fixed this. The recruiting class has been great. The McCarthy culture thing there. You can't risk replacing him and losing JJ Donovan Dixon and Andrel Anthony. You can't.
No, you absolutely can't. I will push back a little bit on the recruiting. We just lost 4-star recruit Mario Eugenio out of Florida, our highest ranked defensive end and defensive lineman. For that matter. So little bit of concern on the recruiting trail. You'd like to see a top 10 team be recruiting in the top 10. We are not in the top 10 right now. So I'd like to see that number jump up. I mean, our success should dictate that we're able to flip some guys, especially with teams like USC and Arizona and, you know, some other big teams. Florida State is an absolute nightmare. I'd like to see us improve our recruiting rankings and use the success, but we're not in any way floundering recruiting right now.
No, you land Damani Jackson on top of Will Johnson, a lot of problems go away.
It's all good. It's all good because, yeah, they're probably both asked to start next year.
Yeah, honestly. A lot of problems go away, so that would be massive for this team, because I'm more concerned about the corner depth than I am the defensive line depth.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. All right, let's call it for the night. There's a lot more for us to cover, but it's a bye week, and that's great, so we can talk about this next week. Michigan basketball is right on the horizon. Juwan Howard just secured another top 5 recruiting class. Super excited to talk about Michigan basketball. Next week, we will preview Northwestern, who is coming to the Big House. Should be pushovers. I expect that to be a win. Going to be a good tune-up game. I would like to see health in that game. I think we win that by 30 no matter what we do.
Gonna bulldoze Northwestern, those journalist majors. They got nothing on us. We'll be fine.
That's what I'm saying. Those guys are more worried about reporting the score than actually participating in it. So
while we both love Pat Fitzgerald endlessly, we're gonna bulldoze this team.
Oh yeah, 100%. So I'm here for it. That's gonna do it for Out of the Blue this week. Make sure that you like, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Give us a like if you listen to us on Spotify. That's where I listen to it. You can follow us on Twitter at Mason Brew. I am Jared. That is Andy. This is Out of the Blue. We'd like to remind you that wherever you go, go blue.